This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com.
Election results, some of them still up in the air. A legend dies in his 90s, and the death toll climbs with these ferocious fires in the north and the south in California. Hey, everybody, what a way to start this week here on America Tonight. But the California fires have us mesmerized in a very sad way. Those of us who live outside of California, I'm somebody who lived in California, and I know all about what the wildfires can do and the Santa Ana winds. The death toll in California is 44. The Woolsey fire burning in Ventura and L.A. counties blamed for two deaths. The rest are all part of the victims of the Camp Fire, which they're just finding bodies and setting up a makeshift morgue because it's so tough to even find the bodies. But there's more than 200 people missing, and now they're starting to turn them up. It's truly an epic tragedy, and now is the worst, as far as deadliest, wildfire in California history. I mean, I'll tell you what, you see these press conferences and you see these guys wiping their eyes. They can barely talk because of what they've seen. And the winds get worse, low humidity, parched terrain. And then you got these firefighters who can barely breathe because they're exhausted. There's just not enough firefighters. You got 13 coroner's search teams that are combing through what's left for victims. They set up two portable morgue units from the military and cadaver dogs to help with the search. Wow. Terrible. I mean, truly, truly a tragedy. PG&E has now come under scrutiny, the electric company in California. They told regulators they had been having a problem with an electrical transmission line right there in that area, that area where it's been the worst in paradise before the fire broke out. So fire investigators are there looking at the transmission line. They haven't said anything yet. In L.A., you've got acres and acres, 90,000 acres in Ventura and L.A. counties are burning up. 435 structures, 30% contained now at this point. And the fire first was reported at almost 2:30 Thursday, last Thursday, near Woolsey Canyon, which is just east of Simi Valley. And then it just exploded from there to all these different towns. Familiar to me because I spent so much time there, a place called Westlake Village, Agora Hills, Calabasas, Thousand Oaks, where I just spent a bunch of time 8 weeks ago. So the good thing is the mandatory evacuations got people out, and of course Californians are helping each other. In Malibu, you have famous people who have lost their homes: Miley Cyrus, Neil Young, Gerard Butler, Shannon Doherty, Robin Thicke, all of those people and more hit by it too. And just emphasizing that they're people, that they have kids, that they have stuff in houses, but stuff can be replaced. It's lives that can't be replaced. So some have their homes surviving somehow, and others see them burn to the ground. And the winds with the winds shifting, that's what makes it tricky to contain. It also makes it tricky for the people who are watching and thinking, well, is it going to jump up? Is it close? Is it on the hills? Pepperdine couldn't have classes. In fact, they came under scrutiny because they were saying to shelter in place, which was encouraging students to stay on the campus when that fire was spreading. So strapping the students, that's something they have to look at. Yes, when there's a shooter, when there's something else going on, but they say that's been the protocol, that if there's wildfires, whatever, that the way to do it is, because you don't have a lot of firefighters in that area, that, you know, they have to shelter in place. And for a lot of the kids, that didn't happen. They said, no, I'm leaving. But what was so scary is that people would evacuate from where they were, and depending on how soon they got out, they would have fires on all sides of them. So they were driving away for their life, you know, just getting out of there. And the university has, you know, maybe up to 4,000 students or so when they're fully operating. So they're saying, you know, listen, if they hadn't been told to shelter in place, then we would have had gridlock all over Malibu, and more things could have happened. Terrible things could have happened. So I think evac policies, all that stuff's going to be looked at. And, you know, there's not enough firefighters to fight all this. That's why you have everybody thanking them again, because they're exhausted. And there's people coming in, yes, but for what we're seeing happen, and it's not contained, and there still are strong winds, this can continue for another day or two. Hopefully not. Well, the greatest thing that could happen is they have a torrential rainstorm, right? Wouldn't that be great? It's not in the forecast as of right now, but it would be tremendous, tremendous if that happened. In Florida, shades of hanging chads. I posted the hanging chads at Kate Delaney fan page. I know you can find them there because they're in a museum in Tampa, and I remember it well, and I'm sure you all remember it well, recounting. So the recount is continuing across Florida in these top races. Republicans are saying there's fraud in some of these areas, and Democrats are saying there's voter disenfranchisement. What? So the bottom line is, this is very much what we see in Florida. Governor Rick Scott narrowly leading the Democratic incumbent Bill Nelson in the Senate race. He's saying that things weren't done correctly. So there's a tug of war over what's happening there, and some decisions that probably will have to be made with this recount as to what's going to happen with some of these seats, the Senate race, and what's happening with the Senate race and what's going to happen for governor. So under state law in Florida, there are strict definitions of what actions could constitute election fraud, and with all those charges flying around, what could really hold up or not hold up, I guess, is the best way to put that. I just know that if you specialize this and you're a lawyer, you should just go camp out in Florida, because if you're known, you're definitely going to get some work, probably some really big work. It's so ridiculous, right? Oh, well. Changes afoot. House goes Democratic, Senate Republican. We Can Count coming up next.
This is Elizabeth McCabe, a.k.a. Lucky One of Truth Frequency News. I wanted to tell you all about Extendivite from HeartDrop.com. Y'all know I check everything before I air it. When I heard about Extendivite on TFR, I went to HeartDrop.com and started my research. It's got cayenne. That's good for blood and circulation. It stimulates the blood flow. It's got garlic, which fights bacteria like antibiotics, and it lowers the cholesterol and blood pressure. It also has milk thistle, which is the best detox for liver. I couldn't wait to try it out, and I'm glad I did 4 months ago. And here's obvious results. My hands and feet don't get cold anymore. The varicose veins have faded too. My wrists don't hurt after typing all day. Now, I tell you all this because it's true and I want you to really live life. Try Extendivite. Go to heartdrop.com and order it.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
The United States of Empire is a book that claims the United States is the empire of the world. George Washington had warned us against foreign wars. The United States of Empire shows that World Wars I and II left England broken. Its former colony, the U.S., had to save the empire. Was there ever a vote? Who do we fight for? The Deep State began with World War I. The United States of Empire by James Dunn. Available at Amazon Books.
Would you like to get back that full head of hair from years past? Introducing Reveal from GCNLife.com. Beverly Hills dermatologist Dr. Nathan Newman invented Reveal, which contains polypeptides with natural botanicals and no parabens, sulfates, silicones, or dyes for a salon-quality hair growth product, Reveal. Here's Dr. Newman.
I have treated a lot of patients who lose their hair and they lose their confidence. We've created a unique set of polypeptides, which we call HPT6. The HPT6 contains the polypeptides from 6 different plants. The scalp infusion treatment should be used on wet or dry scalp. The Reveal hair care system is designed to be used for men and women alike.
Get Reveal at GCNLife.com with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So try Reveal today at GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637. Plus a discount up to 25% off for Reveal at GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637.
If you know Kate Delaney, then you know that her lovable golden retriever, Mahalo, makes her world go around. So when Kate started looking for a high-quality dog food for him, she settled on Life's Abundance, the all-stage grain-free food. It's rated 5 stars by Dog Food Advisor, and that's a win. In fact, Kate loved the food so much that she's now repping the food at kateskibble.com. It's full of high-quality protein and nutrients, omega-3s and more. Kateskibble.com is just what Mahalo needs to be happy and healthy. Grab a bag at kateskibble.com.
Less than 1 in 3 Americans meet the new fitness guidelines. What? So what are the fitness guidelines? Here's what the fitness guidelines are. These are the physical fitness guidelines issued by the federal government. They just came out on Monday. So this is what they say. These should easily be achieved by most. And what do they mean by that? Can you do 150 minutes of moderate to intensive aerobic physical exercise and 2 sessions of muscle strengthening activity each week? Children 6 through 17, they say, should get at least 60 minutes of moderate intense aerobic physical activity per day and 3 sessions of muscle strengthening per week. So what does that mean? It means walking briskly, riding a bike on level ground with a few hills, playing doubles tennis, that's what they're saying. Muscle strengthening includes lifting weights, heavy gardening, shoveling, and yoga. Does that sound good to anybody out there? Let me grab a shovel. Let's do some planting. It does put it in perspective. This cardiologist from Duke, a medical professor who served on the advisory committee for the guidelines, says the 10-minute block was removed because it could have discouraged people who didn't have that much time for moving. So they were saying that parking away from entrances, taking the stairs count as exercise, but they thought it would be discouraging. So they're saying if you can do some of those other things, it's better. of course, anytime you can get moving, we know it's good. And we know there's excuses. And what does it help? Anxiety, blood pressure, Alzheimer's, improves your brain, learning, all of that. And especially for kids, you know, to get kids out. And when they're saying that much, it makes sense. But, you know, guidelines are guidelines. So is anybody going to pay attention to the guidelines? I don't know. It's just pretty interesting what they are saying. I mean, you feel better when you exercise, right? But it's a question of having the time. I think that's what it is. With the kind of work that a lot of people do now, and this is an excuse, but the kind of work that's done now, I think it's sometimes harder to squeeze it in. I think the number one culprit, too, if you do work in an office, you want to escape from the office. Where are you going? You're going out and you're eating some crummy food probably every day, fast food or something like fast food that says they're not fast food, but really they are. Because you can always see at lunchtime all the places are jammed, and who can blame anyone? They don't want to sit at their desk, or they don't want to bring something to work. That doesn't happen that much. And most of the people I know that actually work in an office, every single day they go out. I mean, and now they could try to get healthy food, but they are eating out every single day. And that is just lunch. So that doesn't count if they go out to dinner. And you know, it's easy to pack on those cows and then you're not moving as much. All right, Stan Lee, he didn't have to worry about cows. This guy was like always in pretty good shape his whole life, I would say. He was an icon, this guy. Lived to the age of 95, a life well lived. You know who Stan Lee is? Comic books, movies. He died Monday at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in L.A. And, I mean, just, boy, he appeared in the movies, of the comic book movies, of his characters. You know, he created Spider-Man, Hulk, Avengers, X-Men, the Fantastic Four, Black Panther, Daredevil, Doctor Strange, all kinds of heroes. While he was working as a writer, then editor-in-chief of Marvel Comics in the 60s. And, you know, he, from the 70s when he became a publisher until the 90s, he was the face of Marvel. And he was at the pop culture conventions and the comic conventions and he entertained fans. And he, through his whole life, he was that way. He was that way always. And it's interesting because his wife, I mean, he just had this incredible life. His wife, he was married to for 69 years. And, you know, she was there almost to the end. She died first. But pretty crazy, some of the things that Lee was able to do. And then, of course, the comic book phenomenon, the Marvel Comics, then on the big screen, just absolutely exploded, if you think about it. And he did a cameo in nearly every Marvel movie, beginning with Bryan Singer's X-Men in 2000. And you would look for it. Like, that was one of the Easter eggs. You would look, and you know an Easter egg is a surprise. You would look for him to be there. So how very, very cool. Not cool is the stock market tanking. The stock market down. Oof, Dow Jones took a fat tumble, down 602 points. NASDAQ 206. S&P 54 points. Oof, ugly when we see, you know, that happen. Stocks ended 600 points lower because of, they say, growth concerns that were fueled by Apple and a cutback in oil production. And that's just what happens. You roll on what analysts say is going on with certain companies, and when that happens, then you see a tank in the market. And Saudi Arabia is curbing its oil production next month and possibly into next year, and that added to uncertainty about a global slowdown. Other members of OPEC may also reduce their supply next year. So that changed what happened, because that's a key economic factor that, you know, you're looking for. I think the biggest key is the U.S. Consumer Price Index, because that's the gauge of inflation. And then what happens with retail sales and all of that. If China's economy decelerates, that's not good for the global economy. So when we look at these tariffs and everything else and these problems, not good anyway. And I understand it, but the problem is if the Chinese economy really dumps, then we are all in trouble. If I told you there is a beer that is infused with pot, would you think that I was high? Well, the Blue Moon beer has a new beer that has a different kind of buzz. Yep, it's the Blue Moon Belgian wheat that was in that actually came about a couple of decades ago. But next month, they're going to launch the first beer from the new venture, Syria Brewing Company. And it has no alcohol, but it includes 5 milligrams of THC, which is the ingredient found in cannabis. So it's made with blood orange peel and coriander. The ale has, they say, a deeper orange character and a little different type of bitterness because of the cannabis or cannabinoids that they're putting into it. And they think that they're going to be, well, they'll be able to expand their distribution to California and Nevada. It's going to be available in Colorado in mid-December. Merry Christmas! Here's your Sierra. And seriously, and that's what it has. Cannabis-infused beers are trendy, but so far none released in the U.S. have THC. They mostly have hemp. So that gives it a taste like marijuana. So this will taste differently. And, of course, federal law prohibits people who brew from using marijuana in beer. But Syria's beverage doesn't contain alcohol. So technically it's not a beer. That's how they could get around that. And trust me, all these companies are looking for a way to do it. Corona, they invested in Canopy Growth, which is a Canadian marijuana firm with cannabis drinks. That's part of their future plans. Cannabis, cannabis, cannabis. Guy sat next to me on a plane coming back from Washington on one of my trips, and he was talking to me about cannabis and said, you want to make some money? Cannabis is the thing to get into because that's what people are talking about with the oils, with food, with everything else. And I think in less than 10 years, marijuana is legal across the board. How about that? Coming up, put your feet up, relax, and enjoy the rest of America tonight with me, Kate Delaney.
For P150, P150GA, P150NY, P150OK, P150TN, C250A, C250E, C250Q. Not available in all states. If New York or Colorado, call for a similar offer.
What's the scariest thing about going to the dentist? Opening your mouth or opening your wallet? Because just a simple cleaning can cost $150, and things like root canals can cost you hundreds more. If you don't have dental insurance to help, call Physicians Mutual Insurance Company, 1-800-656-4686. This isn't a discount plan or preventive-only coverage. This is real dental insurance that helps pay for checkups right away. So you can call today and get your teeth cleaned tomorrow. Plus, it helps cover the more expensive procedures you might need down the road. Fillings, crowns, bridges, even costly dentures. There's no deductible and no annual maximum. Your acceptance is guaranteed for one of these insurance policies, even if you're retired. Plus, you can choose any dentist you'd like. Call now for a free information kit with all the details. 1-800-656-4686. That's 1-800-656-4686. 1-800-656-4686.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
You have USA Radio News.
For USA Radio News, I'm Robin Walensky. New numbers as we learn at least 42 people have now been killed in the California wildfires. DNA experts brought in to identify some of the bodies, some people dying in their cars as they tried to escape the flames. Almost 7,000 homes and businesses destroyed. Of course, it being Hollywood, celebrities now getting involved. Actor James Woods helping with his Twitter account, using it to help people find their lost loved ones. Sandra Bullock donating $100,000 to the Humane Society of Ventura County for animals. And Lady Gaga, who evacuates her home in Malibu, showing up and volunteering at a Red Cross shelter. As for the situation in Malibu and Calabasas, Fire Chief Chris Anthony says wind still the biggest problem.
Winds 30 to 40 miles an hour. That clearly has us concerned. We have a lot of resources out on this fire right now.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
If you're over the age of 50 and considering buying an annuity in the next 60 days, I have some important news for you. Don't buy an annuity until you understand the pros and cons of annuities. A free book to help you maximize your retirement income from television host and three-time author Josh Melberg has been released. This book reveals little-known truths about annuity strategies in simple-to-understand terms. Grab a pen right now, because we are about to offer you this free book that unlocks the five little-known secrets we believe baby boomers and seniors should know before buying an annuity. Call 800-985-1813 now, and you'll receive a free copy of Josh Milberg's book, Next Gen Annuity Strategies Revealed. As a bonus, we'll also send you a copy of The Number One Mistakes Retirees Are Making with Their Investments Today, and a free DVD on how you can get up to 33% more income in retirement. Call 800-985-1813 now. Again, that's 800-985-1813. Employees of J.D. Milberg Financial have the appropriate licenses for the products they offer.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
Welcome to Forbes Books at Bedtime with Kate Delaney and Greg Stebbin.
Really excited to welcome to the show Rebecca Rothstein. She is the number one female wealth manager in the U.S., managing director, wealth manager, private wealth manager for Merrill Lynch. And I'll tell you what, she's got this great rockin' podcast, Say It Forward. You can catch it on iTunes. And she is, according to Forbes, she is, as I said, the top ranking woman on a 2016 top wealth managers list, which is quite something if you think about it. So, Rebecca, welcome to the show. And Forbes says you're the one. You are that on the top of the list for wealth management. What does that mean, and how in the heck did you get there?
That's a very good question. And first of all, let me just say thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate your time. It's a very humbling and slightly embarrassing mark to have accomplished. There are certainly so many women in the country that I would consider to be my peers, and certainly they would have the same credentials and ranking as I would. So I'm really flattered by the whole thing. And I've always felt that Forbes, the way that they recognize and the way that they account to get to the people who they rank, I think is probably the most legitimate way in the entire system of people who do this. You know, the criteria that they use is really important, and it's a very broad criteria, and I think that they really do a great job. So I'm happy to be in that position. So thank you for that.
So
now the second question is, how did I get there?
Yes.
I got here because I come to work every morning at 4 o'clock in the morning. And I do, you know, a tremendous amount of heavy lifting. And it's not easy. I mean, this is not an easy job. This is not an easy... I had no clients at all, so I had to start from scratch. And it's not easy. It's a hard job. Anybody in my business knows that. It's a world that's much more difficult as the years have gone on. And it's just, I credit it to hard work, great, great partners, great business partners, great staff. And that's really, that's my, the answer to that question.
So here's what I want to know, Rebecca, because I have a feeling there's a good story here, and we love good stories. So there was a day when you were not working as a wealth manager. You had some career or job before, and then there was the day one of you launching into this new career. So what were you doing before, and what was it like on day one? And was there a moment on day one or shortly afterwards where a light bulb went off in your head and you realized, I can kill it here?
Well, I don't know that I would ever say that I could kill it, but it's a nice thing to say. But the answer to that question is I got married very young. I was 19 when I got married. I'd never finished high school. And I spent my early years working as a buyer for a department store. And I was always good with math. I was always good with numbers. I was always good in communication. And I was starting to have children, and I will tell you that my husband was pretty sick and tired of me crying all the time, because when you're a buyer, you travel a lot. And I would get my babies in the car. My husband would drive me to the airport. I would cling to them. I would kiss them goodbye. I was crying, crying, crying. I would go off on my buying trip, and I would come back, and he'd pick me up at the airport. And this went on and on and on. And he was really as sweet as he could possibly be. He recognized the pain that I was going through not being with my babies. So one morning he said to me, you should be a stockbroker, which I burst in those days we used to call what I do stockbrokers. I said, yeah, right, I never finished high school. How's that going to happen? And he said, well, you're good with math, you're good with people, and you're a good salesperson. So all of those things seem to lend themselves to having a career in that business. So,
wow.
I know, right? It's a great credit to him. So I studied at night and got my Series 7, and then I was lucky enough to find somebody to hire me. And which, by the way, isn't easy. I mean, when you have no book of business and you're not a high school graduate and you have three babies, at that time I had three kids, I now have four, getting somebody to take a leap of faith that you're going to show up for work every day and do a good job, that was a big leap of faith for the guy who hired me. And he did. He hired me about 2 months before the crash of 1987. Which, was pale by comparison
yes.
to the crashes that we have today. But that's what happened.
Wow. So you start off and you have to build that book. You're excited. You get the break. And you said this now. I mean, it's 4 a.m. in the morning, the whole thing, the heavy lifting. You must have done some really heavy lifting in the beginning. What was that like to start off from scratch?
It was not, when I look back on this now, I think, geez, that was really something to have accomplished that. But it's important to remember that in my day, you could cold call people. You can't do that today. And so it's harder for young people today to build a business, I think, than it probably was for me at the time. But I used to come in at 4. I would read all the overnight news. Now, these are different times, right? We didn't have iPhones and Bloomberg terminals on our desks. And so if you wanted to know what was going on in the world, you had to read it. And so I would get in, I would read it, I would form an opinion about what was going on, and then I would start cold calling from the East Coast and work my way to the West Coast. And the only real compliment I'll give myself is that I was a great cold caller.
Hmm.
I was a fantastic cold caller. I used to call people up on the phone, and I would say, hi, my name is Rebecca Rothstein, and yes, this is a cold call, and please don't hang up on me. If I can't convince you in 1 minute or less that I'm worthwhile talking to, then please, you can feel free to hang up on me. Just give me 1 minute. And that's what happened. Now, 98% of the people hung up, like they didn't even want to hear that. But those 2%, listened to me, and I would send them research, and I established a rapport with them, and, I would go and keep calling them and keep sending them research, and then eventually, they would open an account, and I would ask them for referrals, and they would open up another account, and that's really how it started. And I look today at these young people, and it's so much harder for these people to start in our business if you don't have any partnerships or you're not part of a team because you can't cold call anymore. And it's hard, much harder.
So we're talking with Rebecca Rothstein. She's a managing director of wealth management and private wealth manager for Merrill Lynch. She also has a great podcast called Say It Forward. You can find it on iTunes as Just Say It Forward or at justsayitforward.com. So I'm really interested in what you just said, Rebecca, about cold calling. I mean, first of all, I don't think in the history of man and woman and in the history of sales anyone has ever liked cold calling. But you sound like you really embraced it, right? I mean, you may not have liked it, but you did it anyway. And I'm wondering if you can look at it and see some corollary between what you were doing in cold calling back then and how people today are getting better and better at communicating through a lot of different digital channels. Because in today's world, you can do A/B testing, you can try things, you can chart how you're succeeding and how you're failing. And so the medium is different, but I'm wondering if you could see that it might actually be the same tools that you were using, which is refining your message, listening to improve it, and being sensitive to what your prospect or client is thinking, saying, and doing.
That's a really good question. I think that for me, I am so competitive that anytime somebody, and I own it, right? Like I say, yep, I'm competitive. But I'm not competitive to kill people competitive. Like I didn't want to, I wasn't trying to target anybody. I was really competitive with myself. Like I figured if I had a list of 100 people I was going to call today, somebody was going to say yes to me. And I was going to keep calling until somebody said yes to me. I was not giving in, and I was not giving up. And that just was the way it was. So I'm very competitive with myself. And then as I became more successful, I became competitive with my peers, but in a very kind of universally friendly way. Like, you know, we would all be sitting in this pit cold calling, and, you know, we would sort of challenge each other to, well, I'm going to get at least one client today. And there was no way I was going to not win that. It's just not happening. And then I think that, you know, so now I'm developing a book right now. I've got clients. Now I've got people who talk to me. Now I follow through with them. But then the real work begins, right? Because now you've got a client base. So the only way you keep clients, and this is a really important lesson for everybody in our business to know, once you get a client, in order to keep that client, you need to knock the cover off the ball. And not just in your stock picks that you do, because really none of us do that anymore, but you need to service them, you need to respond to them, you need to follow through with them, you need to ask them, am I doing a good job for you? Is there anything else I can do for you? I really appreciate your business. It means a lot to me. You know, these are the little things that people need to do. And they have to remind themselves to say thank you to their clients. Because for sure, those clients, nobody's iron locked to you. You know, they don't have handcuffs that they have to stay with you to be your client. And so you have to acknowledge that you appreciate doing business with them, and you have to respect the fact that you're responsible for their not only present-day monies, but their future monies and their family's future monies. And in our job, you can't ever forget that, ever. You never can take a minute off thinking that you're not having a huge amount of responsibility on the outcome of those people's lives.
Wow.
And you have to acknowledge that. My team and I have a standard, you know, my book is much bigger now, right? So we have a circular plan that every client gets touched every quarter. Every client gets touched every quarter. And so we sit down, we have a whole system here where my lead assistant has a schedule of the people that need to be seen in that quarter, in that coming quarter. And I send out an email to them, let's get a call on the calendar, let's get a meeting on the calendar. I copy her, she follows up, she gets the meeting scheduled. And this goes on every day, every week, every month, every year. And we never let up. So you haven't got a single client in our book of business that will say they haven't heard from us. And so I think that that's the way that you have good performance with your clients, good relations with your clients, and good retention with your clients.
Wow, so well said. Rebecca Rothstein, we're not done with you yet because you have just a wealth of information. So it's perfect. You're the number one female wealth manager in the U.S. Thank you so much for joining us on Forbes Books at Bedtime.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for the invite.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at hbextract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. hbextract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.
This is George Norrie from Coast to Coast AM and History Channel's Ancient Aliens, and we're proud to promote amazing energy, nutrition, and skincare products from Jeunesse. Visit GCNLife.com for products like Luminesse. The Luminesse anti-aging skincare line restores youthful vitality and radiance to your skin, reducing the appearances of fine lines and wrinkles with stem cell technology. There's also Instantly Ageless, which works within 2 minutes, reducing under-eye bags, fine lines, wrinkles, and pores. Jeunesse has products to help you with how you look and feel in a very short time. Nobel-nominated Dr. Vincent Jampapa has designed several products helping the body perform better. Jeunesse products have a 30-day money-back guarantee, and they're available up to a 25% preferred price discount. See all of the amazing Jeunesse products at GCNLife.com or call toll-free 1-844-443-6637. 1-844-443-6637.
Mother's Milk, a miracle elixir. God Said, Man Said.com. Hauntings, dead spirits, and ghosts. Noah's Ark, fact or fiction. God Said, Man Said.com. Sex Superbug. Kiss panic attacks goodbye. Unlock your Holy Ghost pharmacy. God Said, Man Said.com. Y chromosome Adam and mtDNA Eve. 21 signs of doomsday and the chip. Hours of text and streaming audio. God Said, Man Said.com.
Trading involves financial risk and is not suitable for all investors.
Marijuana has unleashed a green gold rush across our nation. It's creating $10.8 billion in new wealth a year. And every day, it's transforming more and more Americans into millionaires. Former Speaker of the House John Boehner reveals how you could become one of them. Join him online for the American Cannabis Summit. Attendance is 100% free, but space is limited. Join online at www.acs2018.com. John Boehner and an esteemed panel will reveal which cannabis stocks are primed to deliver life-changing windfalls. Plus, they will show you how to become a cannabis angel investor, backing the hottest startups before they potentially become worth billions of dollars.
To join the American Cannabis Summit, visit acs2018.com or text JOIN to 76280. Don't miss this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Text JOIN to 76280. Text JOIN to 76280 now.
Boy, anytime I can talk about music, and anytime I can talk about music that was some of the great music, I'm all about it here on this show, as many of you know. Really pleased to be joined by Christopher Hill. He's written a book about rock and roll music in lots of different very famous publications, including Record Magazine, Spin, Downbeat, Deep Roots Magazine. I could go through everything, and it would take up this entire interview, so I don't want to do that. But he's also written a book called Into the Mystic, The Visionary and Ecstatic Roots of the 1960s Rock and Roll. Christopher, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Thanks for having me.
What is it about the 60s? I love the title, Into the Mystic. You know, when I think of mystic and I think of 60s, they kind of go together, especially music-wise, because there was a huge transition then, right? A big transformation when it comes to music at that time period.
Yeah, there was. And the word mystic is, of course, appropriate to it, because for a while there, between, you know, some point in the early 60s and the end of the decade, many of these bands kind of moved away from the sort of basic rhythm and blues or soul music that they had been interested in playing before and began to get a little weird. And they began to experiment with different types of instrumentation, different types of ideas, and they began to think about different different states of consciousness, you know, because they were, among other things they were experimenting with, they were experimenting with psychedelic drugs at the time, too. So a lot of the sound and the subject matter became a lot more varied, a lot more interesting, and a lot of it had to do with the kind of concerns that people would call mystical or spiritual.
Absolutely. I'll tell you what felt really like I was in the middle of the 60s is the first time I went to Haight-Ashbury, and you talk about it in your book, The Acid Culture and the Culture of Hate. Of course, the Dead were probably the most famous, and you say this in your book, the most famous proponents, and gave the heirs of their mainline Protestantism an injection of inferiority like they hadn't had since the Romantic era. Wow, explain that. I love the way you put that.
Well, what I mean is that starting in the Haight-Ashbury district in California and in other neighborhoods, you know, urban neighborhoods around the world that were kind of similar to it, they began to experiment with different states of consciousness. Once again, a lot of this via the help that they got from psychedelic drugs like LSD and smoking a lot of marijuana. But what happened is that this idea of there being other states of consciousness other than the ordinary day-to-day normal one that we all use to get through the day, this became an idea that spread even without the use of these substances. People across America and really across the world began to be intrigued with the idea that there were many, many modes of consciousness and many perceptions that were blocked off to them in their ordinary daily consciousness. And I think that's the message, that was the culture of the hate that I refer to. And I think that became sort of, I think that did affect sort of the consciousness of the whole world in a way.
So do you think that because of the nature of some of the music, like the Dead's the great example, is that why there's this nostalgia always to harken back to it, even for some younger people who aren't aware of some of the deep roots of what went on in the 60s and again, that transformation? I think there's an interest there. We're seeing college courses on it, et cetera. Do you think that's why?
Yeah, anybody who maybe just old enough to have experienced a bit of this firsthand will typically have the experience of a younger person saying to them something like, boy, I was born too late, or I wish I had been born back then. And, you know, granted, looking back, it all looks like sort of one huge party, which in a sense it was. But it was also, like I said, there was also some really serious thought about, you know, what's the nature of human consciousness and can we work with it in a way that would just tend to make more people more fulfilled and more happy. And the Dead certainly had that ethos. You know, that was the point of what they were doing. You know, they started out being sort of the house band for Ken Kesey's Acid Tests back in like 65 and 66. But eventually they came into their own. And the story of their following of the Deadheads is, you know, that's when you talk about younger people who probably weren't there the first time around who want to participate somehow in the mystique of that era, the Deadheads are probably the classical case.
Boy, yeah, isn't that the truth? If you were to even compare a group today or a sound today, is there anyone that equals that you can think of off the top of your head?
Well, I'll tell you, I'll give a plug for a band I really like. The band that gives me the most pleasure of anyone making music right now is a band from the north of England, from Yorkshire, called Trembling Bells. Mm. And I recommend you all to go on YouTube and check it out, especially a song called Just as the Rainbow. Boy, I tell you, I get the same kind of chills from that you can get from like hearing Gracie Slick with the Jefferson Airplane. They have a wonderful female lead singer, a very big, powerful voice. And it's a little bit folk rocky, and it draws a little bit on English and Celtic stuff, but I find it very accessible and it rocks, and I would like to see more people enjoy their music.
Boy, no kidding. I love that sentiment. What was it like for you pulling this all together? Because it seems like, in reading it, it feels like it's so your passion. Was it hard to pull this all together? I mean, you're a prolific writer, but in trying to take this kind of a theme and really nail it, which I think you did, how tough was that?
Well, it just kind of, you know, you say pulling it all together, it kind of fell together in a way that felt kind of natural, and which confirmed me in my hope that I was on to a true theme, a true topic here. Of course, I've been listening to this music most all of my life. So you could say the research went on for many decades. But as I started writing it, I had sort of an inkling of an idea what this is going to be about. But you often find as you're working on something, as you're writing on something, that you really only find out what it's about after you've been writing for a while. And that definitely emerged from this, and I think I managed to find a theme that sort of runs through all of these very, very different kinds of musicians.
Yeah, and as somebody who lived through that, what was that like?
Well, it was great. I mean, I didn't run off to the hate or anything like that. You know, I was just out there in the Chicago suburbs, you know, in middle America. But you really, one of the fun things at the time was that you really felt like with each new album that came out from any of these musicians, any of your favorite musicians, that you were really getting sort of like a message from headquarters about what was happening in the country and various responses you might have to it. It's kind of like, the French Resistance before D-Day picking up these secret messages on the radio telling them to go blow up the railroad tracks and things like that. But anyway, it was that was lots of fun because it had sort of the fun of being in a secret society, and then the importance we accorded to that music was, you know, as high as we could have accorded to any kind of art form, any novels or movies or anything like that. It was really when a new Stones album came out that was. You know, that was the big deal at the moment, and everybody would be listening to it, and every party you went to would be playing it.
Ugh, I love it. Perfect place to end this. Pick up the book, Christopher Hill, Good Stuff, Into the Mystic. Love it. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
If you know Kate Delaney, then you know that her lovable golden retriever, Mahalo, makes her world go around. So when Kate started looking for a high-quality dog food for him, she settled on Life's Abundance, the all-stage grain-free food. It's rated 5 stars by Dog Food Advisor, and that's a win. In fact, Kate loved the food so much that she's now repping the food at kateskibble.com. It's full of high-quality protein and nutrients, omega-3s and more. Kateskibble.com is just what Mahalo needs to be happy and healthy. Grab a bag at kateskibble.com.
In these uncertain times, it makes sense to have a sustainable backup method to cook food and boil water. If your current plan includes using a fuel-burning stove or cooking over an open fire, then there's a much better way. The Minuteman Rocket Stove is a biomass-burning cooking stove that only requires small quantities of sticks and twigs for fuel. The Minuteman Stove is easy to use, smokeless, portable, powerful, and sustainable. For the finest in survival cooking stoves and fire starters made right here in the USA, go to MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com.